From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is made in the people who grow or raise our food. And that's no small or uncomplicated matter. There are stories that we tell ourselves, little fairy tales to make us feel more comfortable about food, and I'll give you two examples. When you go to the grocery store, you can buy food that's cheap, and that's great. It's saving your family money, right? But what do you know about where it comes from and why it is so cheap? Just this morning, the Associated Press published a story about a kind of food slavery that produces cheap shrimp. Like to eat shrimp? Think about this. Every morning at 2 a.m. in a part of Thailand, families hear a kick at the door. Children are told to get up or get beaten. They spend the next 16 hours working in a factory that essentially owns them, tearing the guts, heads, tails, and shells off of shrimp that come to us. Does cheap food still sound so good? Well, how about the story we like to tell ourselves about American farms? As Matt Kelly writes in the launch of Boomtown Table, a new online magazine, Big Ag asks us to believe some quaint ideas about how food is grown, but the reality is often quite different, as Matt describes the work of a farmer named Klaus Martin near Penh Yan. Wait a minute, though. Let me back it up for a second. Boomtown Table? It's probably something you might not have heard of yet, but that changes this hour. It's an ambitious new project, a local one, and it is our focus, so let me welcome the guests. Leah Stacey is here. Leah, one of the co-founders of Boomtown Table. Congratulations on the launch. Nice to have you here.
Thanks. Thanks for having us.
Chuck Sarankoski is here. I don't know if it's 50-50 brain on this, but you and Leah have been doing a lot in co-founding this launch. Nice to have you here, Chuck.
Thanks for having me. It's neat to finally be on the radio.
And actually talking about Boomtown out loud. Chuck, if you don't know, Chuck is also behind a couple of restaurants that you would know locally. Good Luck, Cure, anything else you need to mention? Is that it for now?
That's it for now.
Okay.
Yeah. There's that Rochester Cocktail Revival thing, too. But yeah.
So he's got his hands in a lot of different projects. Eric Hooper is here as well and already doing some writing for them. You might have heard Eric's voice here earlier this year back in his coffee world days. He is back in the agricultural world.
Yep,
yes,
back in that. Farming again at Mud Creek Farm, CSA out in Victor.
And so congratulations on this entire launch of Boomtown. And Leah Stacey, let me start with you because I've been bumping into Leah at various coffee locations once in a while over the last, 6 to 9 months, it feels like.
Yeah.
And we've talked about Boomtown, but it's been this under-the-radar thing. And a week ago, you got to tell people it was real and it was online. So if you go to boomtowntable.com right now, I've been calling it online magazine. Is that fair? Yes?
I think that's fair.
Okay. So what are people going to find there?
Well, they're going to find some great storytelling about local food and drink. Really, we have people from the industry, so restaurant industry, that's where Chuck kind of comes in, and with cocktails. We have people who are working at local farms, and we have some trained photographers, trained journalists, and it's this sort of wacky collaboration between all of us. We're using our strengths to bring stories and hopefully some education and also build a really great community around what's happening in Rochester and the Finger Lakes.
We have a very interesting and vibrant local magazine scene, which you have been a part of. You know, Leah, you've been with 585, now at Post, and we have many others as well. And so when you think about something like Boomtown Table, you have to decide there's a need for this, there's a demand for this, now's the right time. Why did you decide that?
So we have a lot of great content in all of the local magazines about food and drink, on and off. Most of them have a section dedicated to that. We really feel that there's enough here where we can start in Rochester and begin to spread out to all of the Finger Lakes, even out to places like Batavia, right? Where's that? And there is content that's just not being covered because people don't have the budget or they don't have the time or they don't have maybe even the person and don't know where to find the person who could write about certain topics. And so I don't know. To this day, when people ask me what was the first conversation, I really think it was when Chuck was writing for 585. We got coffee, and he was like, this is a need. And I had been thinking, wouldn't it be great if we did have, you know, a magazine that was just dedicated to this, but a magazine has a huge budget. So I had been wanting to experiment with things online, and this filled that perfectly.
It is not a food blog.
It is not a food blog. We're not reviewing anything. We're telling stories. It's a lot of narrative. It's interviews, Q&A. But yeah, we're not going to tell you where your next date night should be.
All right. Well, Chuck, you know, in those conversations with Leah, why did you see a need that was unfilled in this community, given the edibles and the other things that are out there right now?
Well, first of all, when you, especially when you mention something like Edible Finger Lakes or any of the other publications, it's not that anyone is doing a poor job of talking about the stories behind the local food scene. It's just that we identified a whole bunch of channels that could really be explored further, and we wanted to do it from the perspective of the people that were growing or serving or cooking the food instead of from the outside. And it doesn't mean that there's not, you know, there aren't representations of, you know, food industry professionals getting interviewed, but you really see in bigger markets, it's more of a dialogue between the journalism and the makers and doers. And we thought, well, what if we kind of applied that perspective to the project? And you know, to be clear too, I'm really good at talking about ideas and being a consultant. This, when you ask the question about, you know, 50-50, it is more, Leah's wrangling this whole thing together. So I'm great at saying, you know, all of these neat, like pie in the sky ideas, she can put them into fruition. It's not that anyone out there is doing a poor job, but we could do a much better job in having a unique channel to tell the story of Rochester and Finger Lakes food and drink in one dedicated spot. There's a lot of reasons I think that is important, but I think we do need it, yeah.
Lee, are you going to edit Chuck when he writes just to make sure it's not all about cure and good luck?
Yeah, that happened this morning. I had left a bunch of notes in one of his upcoming articles.
To come off of that, not to say this in like an arrogant sense at all, but we don't need an online magazine to as a service to my two restaurants or really to any restaurants that are popular. It's not a vehicle to promote products or to promote businesses. My career as being a restaurateur only helps the site because it gives me an insight into what might be neat to talk about in like the restaurant industry. So instead of focusing on like who's putting pumpkin in their cocktails, it might be neat to talk about like what do predominant chefs have in their refrigerator and how do they think about approaching like a family meal or something like that, like, you know, because we're real people and we have lives outside of our food jobs too. So
well, and I am going to get into Chuck's first piece, which actually has a bit of a feminist streak to it, I think is fair to say, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. Well, that piece, that my contribution was actually originally published in 585.
It was a 585 piece.
Several months ago.
But it was cool to see it under the headline there, because I like the layout at Boomtown. And again, if you're just joining us, boomtowntable.com right now, you can jump on and find how many pieces are online now?
We have about 7, including a video.
Okay. And there's going to be new content a couple times a week?
Twice a week.
So,
are you stressed out, Evan?
No, because I'm not on your staff. I mean, I would be if I were on your staff. If I ran a couple of restaurants and a cocktail revival and then put myself in this, I would be stressed out.
You might have an email in your inbox right now.
Eric Hubert is one of the people writing for them. And Eric, you know, we've heard Leah talk about her perspective on why this is needed. Chuck is in the restaurant industry. You're back on the agricultural side.
Sure.
Where's the opening that you see?
Yeah, for me... I think I kind of, to steal from Wendell Berry, as most farmers do every day when we think about why we do what we do. In his essay he wrote in the late 80s, The Pleasure of Eating, he starts with this thesis, this premise essentially, that eating is an agricultural act, something that we've probably seen cheesily put up on the wall at a restaurant or a cafe or something like that. But it really does have an incredible depth behind it, I think. And he poses the juxtaposition between eating agriculturally, engaging that, and understanding ourselves as eaters as a part of that process. He juxtaposes that against this idea of what we've become, what he calls us passive consumers. And that, for me, is what's exciting about taking a different approach to food, to food and drink in the region. It's about education, I think, primarily. You know, connecting people as simply as Q&As and interviews with farmers and chefs like we're doing, that we'll continue to see that month to month to month throughout each year on the site. As simple as that, or as complex as digging into food and politics. And, you know, we're coming up on a season of primaries and then general election. And we want to, not even in a biased way, but just in an educational way, say, you know, how are you voting with where you spend money when it comes to food, the thing that we all do, the thing that keeps the world spinning? So for me, that's a really, really important kind of critical paradigm to this whole idea, is connecting the fun and the flair and the flavor of restaurants and of cocktails and all of that to the farmers and the production and to the core of what it is.
Well, as one of your readers now, let me tell you what I really liked about what I see in the launch. I see a range of kind of models for storytelling. I see the kind of one-off, the outlier story, the unique, the fun to read. I see the story that's wrapped up in a larger issue like Matt Kelly did, and the question of Klaus Martin, but also who really is growing your food? Are the stories we tell ourselves to feel better about the food we eat, are they true? What should we know about them? You know, and then I see sort of just sort of interesting writing that could be sort of anything else. I know Chuck's piece was brought over from 585, but, you know, we've all been there in the bar, Chuck, where we're standing across from someone's yelling. What, get away from the microphone. Can you do the yell?
Oh, yeah. Sweetheart. Yeah.
Yeah. Where did that idea come from? Because you didn't see that in one of your places in Rochester.
No, but it could happen there, and because it's not, I don't think, I would like to say we wouldn't let it happen. It's you know, it's, and maybe that person that I saw doing that, I guess for the listeners, what we experienced, like this kind of goofball at a bar in a different city, standing up on a stool and yelling sweetheart over and over to get the female bartender's attention.
Hey, sweetheart. And why?
Yeah, and you know, beyond making, you know, illustrating that he's a ding dong. The other thing that you know, we got to think about the ways that we act out in public, or we got to think about the ways that we eat and we drink, and you know what we choose to, if we vote with our mouths, then how, what we choose to buy at the grocery store might, you know, have an impact of what, you know, industry is going to, you know, plant, or how crops are going to be, you know, raised. That speaks a certain way. But what we're going to kind of tolerate, or how we're going to act to the people that, you know, serve our food or make our food, also, you know, has an impact. And just because a girl decides to look cute standing behind a bar does not mean that she has invited you as a male to objectify her or to act like...
Essentially catcall, right?
Well, yeah, you know, you're speaking in a way that, you know, that sort of implies that you buying the drink that you're buying is going to some way, you know, take care of her or provide for her. Because I would say sweetheart is something that either a grandpa says to a granddaughter, or a husband might say to a wife, and, you know, in with conviction, not some kid just yells over a bar in order to get a vodka soda. But, you know, but it was also kind of funny, tragically funny. So
it is tragically funny, because unfortunately we've probably all been there. And you also mentioned your male bartenders don't hear the equivalent.
Because even though, you know, a bar is a social place, there is a... there can be a salacious aspect to it, but when a female customer makes an advance to a male bartender, this is going to touch upon a whole other range of issues. I don't think the male bartender ever needs to be nervous when he walks to his car at the end of the night, and that's what's kind of disgusting about it when you think of a male customer doing it to a female.
You see, that's just one piece. It already has me, you laugh a little bit about, because we can all picture that scene, but then you think about some very serious things. As the editor, Leah Stacey, what do you think about that? I mean, you've probably been there.
Well, I've never been a bartender.
No, but you've probably seen people in bars treating people that way.
Yes. Yes, I have. And I think when you speak to the various types of content, I was so happy when you were describing that, because as the editor and as somebody coming from a journalistic side of things, that is one of my biggest goals, is for us to have a variety of content, you know, the fun pieces, the long form, the policy related, issue related pieces. But then we also want to play around a bit with things like, I don't know if you noticed on the Guglielmo story, the flag is actually waving in the photo. It's it's an animated photo. So we're subtly playing around with things right now. And, you know, I read a lot of Lucky Peach. I get the magazine. I look at the website online. And we're all readers of things like Civil Eats and Eater and Grub Street. And I think Chuck mentioned this briefly before. We're being inspired by these national outlets and bringing that quality and that variety here, but using regional content. So I'm happy that that's coming across.
Listeners, I'm going to be working through more of the stories that you'll find in the launch of Boomtown Table, because there is a fun and a wide range there. But to answer a couple of questions, Michael on Twitter just said, just tuned in. Are you talking about a new magazine or a website? It's web only, boomtowntable.com. It's an online magazine. And Mark sends a note, says, is this a pay model or free? And if it's free, how are they making money?
It's a great question.
Any suggestions?
Any pay model planned for this, Stacey?
We do, and I don't want to give away too much here because it's very much still in the works, but we're going to be working with events. We're also very open to talking to sponsors.
But for now, all the content on there is...
All of the content. There's no ads on the website.
And there's no ads. And for now, all the content is there, and Mark's asking if he's got to pay for it right now.
No. No, you can go to boomtowntable.com and read away.
Okay, but that could change.
I don't foresee us putting up a paywall, but I do foresee us maybe having ads at some point on the website.
Okay. And, you know, the last part of his question was, how are you going to make money? I mean, we're sitting here talking about it. I've been calling this an ambitious project, and the reason I know that term is not a subjective one, it's an objective one, is because this is difficult for anybody to sustain this much content in perpetuity, you know. Mm-hmm. So can you sustain? Is the model sustainable?
We are going to find out. We have a lot of really good plans.
You're supposed to say yes, you know.
Well, yeah, of course. But how many times have you heard somebody say yes? I work in the editorial world. I've been laid off from an editorial job. I'm not going to be pie in the sky about this, but I will tell you that we've done a ton of research, and I really believe very strongly in the team that we've assembled. We've been approached by some new team members already, and this is a passion project that I believe could be a very profitable project in the future, and we have some long-term goals for that, and we're being very realistic.
All right, listeners, on Twitter at Evan Dawson, or you can email the program. I want to hear from you about what are the kinds of stories when it comes to food, policy, ethics, agriculture, drink. What are the kinds of stories you think should be told? This is your chance to communicate directly with the people who are creating this kind of content. And you can call the program as well. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. Or right here in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. You launched with how many stories online, Leah?
7, including a video.
7. And two times a week new content, which means at least two new pieces a week?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you're
the smirk every time.
She does smirk every time, as if like you have to convince yourself that you can do it.
No, I feel like it's a challenge. I love challenges, so I'm up for it. We've got 5 pieces being worked on right as we speak. Some of them are in my inbox waiting for edits back. And I'm just really excited. I feel like the feedback has been awesome. The community has been very supportive. And again, I believe really strongly in the team that we've assembled.
I think one of the exciting things and encouraging things too is that we're not talking about two long form journalistic kind of information only articles every week. We have so many different creative people on our team. Chuck's kind of guiding the way creatively as far as we're laying things out and presenting it. I mean, this could be photo essays on a farm or on a restaurant, on a tasting menu at a new restaurant or something like that. It could be a video. It could be long form. It could be an interview. And I think starting with such a diversity of pieces like that will, one, make it more doable to get unique content out each week, but also make it really interesting to tune in each week and see kind of what we're doing.
Okay. Well, you know, Leah and Chuck, since it was your efforts that really got this thing going, I'll ask you a question that I suspect what you're going to say is, the target market, target audience for this is everybody. But early on, who are the kinds of people who are going to go to boomtowntable.com? I mean, they're probably the kinds of people who are already sort of in touch with the local agricultural scene, et cetera. Is that fair, and are you betting that that community is growing?
Oh, that community is definitely growing. And I hate to drop this word, but millennials are very much about experiences.
Why do you hate to drop that word?
Because I am one. So are you. I think we all are.
I'm not.
Chuck and I might be just at the cutoff. I don't know.
All right. That's fair.
Senior millennials.
Are you a, what are you, an X or Y? I don't know.
It depends what, really depends what study you choose to read. I like the study that says I'm not one.
See what I mean?
That's why she didn't want to say millennials. Yeah. But early on, millennials will be a big part of the audience for this. Obviously not exclusively so.
Yeah. I think food and drink and experiences are something that has been getting a lot more attention. It's trending, so to speak. But it also is trending necessarily because our generation is realizing that we have to care about this because we are the ones who need to carry it forward and sustain these industries. Another thing that we've talked a lot about with this is that a local economy relies so heavily on this industry, whether that's agriculture, which, as you can read in Matt Kelly's story, is a big part of what we do here in New York State. But also the food and drink industries can drive tourism. You know, tourism is a large part of a city's economic health, whether we want to admit that or not. And it's cool to go other places and say you're from Rochester and they say, oh, I went to a great restaurant there, or, oh, I had a great cocktail there, or, you know, I grew up on a farm in the Finger Lakes. That's so neat. You know, it's a little hometown pride. So if we say we started with this audience who really believes in this, I think that audience is only going to continue to grow.
Okay. Jack?
Yeah, you know, you're sort of, I come with an optimistic naivete because I, you know, being in the restaurant world, it does seem like you're kind of like peddling to everybody, or you expect a whole, you know, a big spectrum of ages or, you know, demographic backgrounds. So I expect that. But you're also, This also is not without precedent. It is missing a little bit in Rochester. You have, you know, in New York City, there are a lot of different outlets to have, you know, online food magazines or food blogs or however you want to put it in those markets.
Leah does not want to say food.
No,
blogs.
Exactly. But if you do live in, you know, New York, LA, or Chicago, there are things like Grub Street and there are things like Eater that, whether people are going to be, you know, visiting Rochester or moving into Rochester, they are going to, you know, have some experience with sites like that. Because when you come here now, or whether you're going to college here, whether you're visiting for the weekend, or whether you are, you know, doing your medical residency here, or you moved here for a job, whatever it happens to be, what is the resource that you have? What is the resource you have to know what's going on? Like, what, you know, I'm not talking too much to the farm angle of it right now, but where do I go this weekend? What restaurants are cool? Like, where's good brunch? Who's open on a Monday? And then beyond Yelp, beyond Instagram, you know, let's have a channel that really, that is a companion to all of this effort that extends from agriculture all the way to your, you know, your server. Let's have like an outlet for it. Let's have a way to establish that this is like a cool cultural happening in Rochester. And here's a way to showcase it.
All right. Well, an email from a listener just as wants to know, are they going to be writing about the challenges that small farms face? Well, I mean, Eric Cooper, I'm going to start with you. What would you say to that?
Yeah, and I think that you'll be able to see that. I mean, that'll be a huge part. I think that's a lot of the conviction that comes behind the agricultural side of things for our publication. But that's twofold. It's there's challenges, but we also want to highlight the fact that we live in, I think, the most, pretty objectively, one of the most agriculturally diverse and just incredible regions in the country. We really are, and in New York State, that is, not just this region, but New York State, I mean, we're the breadbasket. We really are. We're headed that direction. We're actually growing food, more food than almost anywhere else in the country. So there's that part that wants to be highlighted. And I think that, you know, we want to encourage people with that. But along with that, there are so many challenges, but challenges that are not as insurmountable as we might be led to believe, because you hear these big things like, you know, in the census, farming isn't even considered an individual vocation anymore. It's lumped in with that less than 1% other, as far as how many farmers there are in the country. Or you hear about the average age of a farmer going up to the high 50s and 60s. I mean, there's this huge gap. But we do have this incredible movement. I'm fortunate to be a part of this incredible movement and work with so many young people, the millennials and otherwise, that are coming up on the farming side. And with that, it does bring challenges. So we're going to hear about that. We're going to hear about policy and land access and all of those things. And it's going to be real. It's not going to be, that's part of Lee and Chuck's conviction behind this. It's not going to be just sound bites where I should actually learn what that means.
Well, right, because look, about 7 months ago in this program, we had a conversation about millennials who chose farming. Most people, if you're a millennial and you're in farming, it's because you were raised in farming. But we're seeing an interesting group of people who have sort of made a choice. I don't know about you, Eric.
Sure. So five of us are on the crew at Mud Creek. Ruth Blackwell, who owns the farm, is the only one that actually really grew up on a farm. She's kind of the daughter of off-the-grid hippies in Vermont. And she lived, you know, she had farming background. I'm a 315er, so I don't know if there's some farm, you know, agriculture by association, and there's some farming in my family. I come from the Far East, Macedon. But no, I mean, I was a cul-de-sac kid. Most of us were cul-de-sac kids or some variation. And there's something that compels you towards food.
Well, and so here's why I'm bringing that up now in relation to the email from a listener who wants to know about if you're going to cover the struggles of small farmers.
Sure.
Some of the people who were on this program 7 months ago talking about choosing farming as a vocation, not something they were born into. You know, I want to be careful with how much I talk, you know, in terms of actual names and whatnot. I know a lot of you know them. You have to make decisions on whether you can keep going. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people are telling me that right now it's not sustainable to keep going in the exact same way, or maybe we'll have to make some adjustments. Maybe we go back to school. Maybe we change the model entirely. That's really hard because you don't want to over-glamorize this notion of the beauty of farming,
no.
You know, because it is hard. And I've been told by people who've tried to make this go, you get to know what actual poverty line or right near that edge feels like.
Sure.
Yes?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. And that's one of the cool things, you know, the series that we're doing, and the first one, James Cagle, is a young farmer, early 20s, such a cool dude. And awesome.
Tell us a little bit about him. Go ahead.
So James, just he's in his second season on his own. He's 23, 24 years old. Buzz's Garden is his farm, and he leases land, which most of us do, because that is a huge obstacle. But that in and of itself is maybe one small answer to a question like that and things that we'll hear about. You hear him talk in his interview that he leases land because it makes farming as a young person financially viable, as opposed to coming up with massive capital and then sustained capital throughout the year in order to cover big things like mortgages and taxes and all of that. But James is an awesome guy. He went out on his own. He farmed for a couple years under some really cool people that you'll hear about in the interview as well, and people that I'm sure you'll hear more about in further interviews and articles and features in Boomtown. Guys like Dennis LaPel, who I think you might know.
I know Dennis very well.
Another great guy. Spent some time with them, learned maybe enough of the ropes. We never really learn enough of the ropes, but enough to say, in his words, you know, I figured I was working 7 days a week for other people. Why not give it a go working 7 days a week for myself, doing something that I'm convicted to do, that I love to do, that I'm passionate about? And you hear his take on it. And again, to that question about challenges, there are so many different ways to approach this. And one of my goals on the agricultural side at Boomtown is to highlight the different ways, because it's not one size fits all. It's incredibly contextual. And there are so many creative people doing different things out there, trying to make it sustainable in different ways, whether it is leasing or whether it's stacking and growing for restaurants and a CSA, growing for members or markets. But that's also a huge part of where our readers come into play. The question when it comes to activism in any facet or platform is, what can I do? There's always this big ethereal thing of, you know, this is where the world is going, but we feel so disconnected from that. And it really is quite simple. It's pay more for smaller portions at restaurants.
Well, that's sort of why I mentioned the shrimp thing, which was this amazing story this morning. Frankly, it shouldn't be amazing anymore. If you missed that earlier, the AP with a big story this morning about child slave labor producing a good amount of the shrimp that comes here. I'm not saying anything that you go out and get right now, but Whole Foods, a number of different places have been purchasing shrimp that apparently comes from child slave labor. And then we all go, well, I'm so glad that's cheap. You know, oh, I got that, you know, I got a 100 pack for $1.99. I mean, of course you did, right? I mean, sure. Now we're starting to see the costs of that. So when I look at Boomtown Table and I think about what could happen going forward, one of the things that I hope comes out of a project like this, as someone who just roots for local agriculture, is this. We're at this interesting moment where I think in the last 5 to 10 years, we always think we're always in an interesting moment. But anyway, I really do think when it comes to food, we're at an interesting time where in the last 5 to 10 years, we've become much more in touch, generally speaking. I don't know if it was Omnivore's Dilemma and then a bunch of dominoes that have fallen since then, but we're more in touch as a society with where our food comes from. We ask more questions. We care more about the ethics. We talk about gestation crates and pigs on this program. And the audience feedback goes crazy because people want to know. We talk about ethical treatment of chickens. Dennis LaPelle in Lakestone,
sure,
you know, is one of the few examples locally that people can know exactly that the chickens are going to be treated in a way that is not going to show up on these undercover videos. So people do care. My concern is if the scalability is such a barrier that you've got millennials or whoever it is getting into farming because they care and they want to do it better, but in 5 years or 7 years, they're exhausted and they're out of money, then 5 to 10 years from now, we're going to be in a very different time again. And I don't know what changes that. There's not a single answer that I know of that changes. I'm not like an enemy of Big Ag, but I do think we need more transparency. So I don't know what happens. I just know that I hope Boomtown's part of that conversation. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that's what we hope too. And I think that engaging with the readers is going to be critical to that, because it's not about, like, you know, Chuck mentioned, we have all these big ideas, whether it's writing about food or farming and stuff. It's not even us coming up with creative content. It's about people engaging, and we're actually looking to start a conversation that doesn't end with, you know, closing out your screen at Boomtown Table or having a conversation even over one of the drinks that we've talked about. But it is those simple things like start paying a little bit more for a little bit smaller portions, or, you know, get rid of this one-stop shop idea of buying all your produce and meat and everything in one singular place, and take an extra 20 minutes in your week and go here. And that's where I think it becomes sustainable. It becomes sustainable at scale when that scale is engaged.
Well, I think about the restaurants locally. I know Chuck Sarankowski out at Good Luck and Cure. You're regularly working with farmers who are at the smallest of the small. I mean, Emma Brinkman is a perfect example. Emma and Ben of Pachamama Farm, and that's been a struggle but a passion project for them. And I know you guys have been customers of them, right?
One example. Sure. Full Moon, Firefly, right. Squash Blossom, whole bunch of small farms.
And you don't have to.
No. We don't have to, but I, along with my partners at Good Luck, I couldn't imagine. We don't know how else to do it. You don't have to, but that's. You know, I don't want to posture too much, but there's a sort of oxymoron or redundancy I would hope most people see if they know that they go to a restaurant and get fresh food. I sure hope so. I sure hope it's fresh. That's your talking point. Well, you know, I think you sort of get to the point too where farm to table becomes a little bit trite, because food is grown on farms, and hopefully if you go to a restaurant, if you choose to go to a restaurant that's any good, they're going to buy from good farms. They're going to buy from people that care about the food that they grow. Now, in transparency, it can't really get local tomatoes, so it's not like 100% of the food comes from the farms. And in Rochester, it's not California, we don't have 3 growing seasons, so unless everybody wants to eat parsnips and rutabagas all winter long, we got to have a few other options and bring them in. But here's why I think Boomtown Table is successful, or why I think that it can make change. A lot of people are in this industry because they may not have chosen it, but they remain in this industry, like whether they're a small farmer or they're a bartender, because it's a craft. And it's a craft, like furniture making is a craft, or being a sculptor is a craft. And you you can extend your personality, you can create, you can take care of people, you can do a lot, and you're really successful at it if you're doing it because you love to do it. This is not going up the ranks and starting at a regional bank and hoping to like be promoted. I'm not knocking anybody, but this is a different kind of industry. You're making things with your hands and you are doing something to provide a service to someone. What can it do to help the small businesses and small farmers is that it's not Shangri-La. Not everyone will make it. Not every millennial that decides to start a farm is going to do it in 10 years from now. But if we provide a context, if we're simply the backbone, the journalistic backbone of why, you know, as a line cook, you work a 14-hour shift, or why you are a farmer and you get up at 5 a.m. to go plant chickpeas or, you know, whatever it happens to be, at least we can showcase your efforts and hopefully engage the community, involve everyone to see that it's exciting and it's life and it's something to be, you know, something to be showcased. And it makes us feel good about our jobs when we go out and do it beyond just the creation. And maybe it builds some careers along the way. And, you know, and that in turn provides outlets for there to be even better restaurants and even more rich and vibrant food scene, retail food scene that, co-ops and things like that that directly benefit the farms. Or it teaches everyone why they really should go to a restaurant that doesn't just say their food is fresh, but tells you what farm the food comes from, because it helps the whole economy.
Well, I'm way late for a very, very short break, and we're going to come back and spend the last 15 minutes finding out what is on the way, coming up for Boomtown Table. It's launched. It's online now. Boomtowntable.com, an online magazine that, what's the shortest one-sentence definition you give it, Leah Stacey?
The life of local food and drink.
The life of local food and drink. That's not even a sentence, by the way.
No, doesn't even have to be.
Doesn't even have to be a sentence. We're going to find out what they have planned for the future coming up here. So short break and more with the team from Boomtown Table next. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on The Next Connections, we're talking the future of drug law. Everyone from Republican Chris Christie to the Obama administration's drug czar says the way we treat drug addicts has to change in this country. We'll explore that first hour. Then second hour, all about Star Wars, getting ready for the big release. We'll talk to fans about their expectations and more second hour.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from the Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra, celebrating the season with Gala Holiday Pops this weekend at Eastman Theater. Jeff Tysick leads the RPO and Festival High School Chorale in seasonal songs for the whole family. Performances Friday through Sunday. Tickets at rpo.org.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. If you're just joining us, we're talking about Boomtown Table. And here's a note from James down there on Linden Street in Geneva, one of my favorite places. My favorite street in all of the Finger Lakes region is Linden Street, Geneva. And James is the owner of Microclimate, the wine bar down there. It's a really, really cool spot in the region. He's listening on 89.5 FM, Finger Lakes Public Radio, WEOS, where we hope you're listening throughout the Finger Lakes region today and every day. And James writes and says, I'm digging today's topic. Blessed to have grown up surrounded by conscientious farmers, Klaus Martin in particular, stoked on the direction of Rochester's food and drink scene, rooted by its entrepreneurial spirit, hoping Boomtown will cover the larger region. It's so fresh in places like Geneva, where I've been grateful to host folks at Microclimate. Keep up the good work. That's from James. So he says larger region, he says, as well. Leah?
Oh, we'll be there. Yeah. We've already got things on the site right now. Apple Country Spirits is in the 315. Klaus is certainly not here in Rochester.
No,
slow but sure. You know, we're building up steam. We have an editorial idea list that is out of control. It's so large. And we want to hear listeners' ideas for sure. That's why we had a launch party. That's why we're going to continue to do events. And that's why we have an email sign up on the website, which I've been watching the emails roll in. And all I can say is thank you to everyone who's signing up. It's really encouraging and really fun to see that.
Where can people sign up?
If you actually just go to the website, you scroll down, it's in the footer. You just put your email address in. And then if there's something more specific that you want to send us a note about, there's a contact form on the site as well.
And they've got James, they've got Matt Kelly down there who lives in the Finger Lakes, not far from you. And just the amount of fossil fuels it takes to get to Rochester, I think Matt comes here only when he has to. So I think he'll be throughout that region if I know Matt as well as I think I do. So, no, there's certainly a lot of possibilities of coverage. And, you know, we're going to be talking to the people behind FLX Table, which is opening on Linden Street in Geneva, right near James, coming up here. A lot happening there and throughout the region. Real quick, even though Chuck feels like he's monopolized the mic, I'm just going to ask you briefly. you said you don't want Boomtown to be this case of, you know, just writing about the obviously hot restaurants. But I think some people do want to stay on top of the scene that changes. It's kind of amorphous. What's opening? What's going on? Who's doing what where? And so, you know, in your mind, does Boomtown need to at least cater to some of that?
Oh, absolutely. One module will get underway soon. Will be a, you know, kind of a current events sort of rolling thing, you know, just what to do this weekend. We want to publish that weekly. I have a lot of friends and colleagues in the restaurant business. I want to talk about everything that people are doing from, you know, Antonetta's to Trotta to the Revelry, all kinds of friends and colleagues doing all kinds of cool stuff. You know, and even in this room, I can't remember if you mentioned it on mic or off mic, but like, look at the people in here. We represent, like, somehow we've been connected to a whole bunch of coffee shops, including Fuego Pour, Java's. There's a whole bunch of restaurants that you can make connections to, and then farms. Everyone kind of knows everybody. Everybody, you know, everybody in the scene can kind of benefit from something like this, and it's meant to serve everyone and talk about what's, you know, what's going on, what's exciting. You know, how about even just as an outlet to, like, make people excited that a restaurant is opening? Like, that's, you know, Buffalo has that. You know, New York City certainly has that. New York City has it. I think it gets overblown, you know, the minute they put brown paper on a window, they start speculating out what it's going to be. But, like, let's track, like, the opening of a business. Let's create a little bit of buzz to help those things out. I think you'll find a mixture, as Eric said earlier, you're going to find a mixture of long form and medium and short form journalism. Not everything is going to, there's going to be enough to, like, sit back on a Sunday and really dive into the site, but there's also going to be things that, you know, when you're scrolling through your mobile device, you can get a little glimpse of that food scene too.
And there are things happening. I was driving home on Friday and I drove past Swillburger and I saw the big sign and I slammed on the brakes and I thought, I'm picking up burgers, I'm going in, and they're still, like, you know, doing construction work. And I walk in and Brian Van Etten's like, you want to, like, grab, like, a paintbrush or something? You know?
Yeah.
No burgers tonight. So I know that's, they hope to get that open before the end of the month. That's one example of one thing happening in Rochester, and this is a big region. So there's a lot going on. So, but there will be no actual reviews or sort of ratings or whatever, Leah, is that right?
Yeah, we're not here to compete with Yelp or any of the local food bloggers. We're here to, I feel really strongly about story and delving into the stories behind these places, which is, I think, what we've been alluding to this
Absolutely.
Entire conversation.
I love that.
And what a review tends to leave behind is the story element, the name, the person and the personality behind the name of, you know, that chef or that restaurant or that farmer. And on the editorial side, I would actually like to profile some of the food bloggers and some of the other people doing food coverage. Why not? We're writing the rules here, so why not do that?
So you're not going to do what Chris Lindstrom does, but you might write a story about Chris Lindstrom?
Exactly.
I see. See,
you got it.
This. We're turning it on our head.
Hey, Chris.
So we've got a few minutes left with the team from Boomtown Table. When was the official? I've been saying a week. When was the official launch?
It was exactly a week ago today.
A week ago today. Yeah. Boomtowntable.com. So let me go around the table and just ask what excites you most coming up? You said you've got a long list of ideas. So I'm going to start with Eric Hooper. What's coming up that either you're writing about or you know that Boomtown's going to be covering?
One, in my own head, to tap into what you were saying, I think Castle Street and Linden Street are maybe two of my favorite in a 100-mile radius.
Where's Castle?
It's perpendicular to Linden.
Oh, okay.
We've got Lake.
This is what I always drive on to get to.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Lake Drum and Red Dove Tavern and all those. And I would love to kind of feature, like, neighborhoods off the beaten path for if you're talking about you know, Rochester based, but getting out to different regions. But specifically on food, growing it, and how to buy it is what I want to focus on coming up, and just talking about what is the difference between a public market and a farmer's market and a co-op and a grocery store and a CSA and a subscription that's cooperatively run, and why does all of that matter and how do you have access to it? Buying food is something we all have to do in one way, shape, or form, and it dictates, like Chuck was saying, what we as farmers grow and why we grow it, how we grow it, all these things. So I'm excited about that.
Okay. Chuck Sarankowski, what's on the horizon that is at top of your mind for Boomtown coming up here?
Developing an events module, what's happening this weekend. Talk about how to make cocktails out of unicorn horn. And the importance of wearing pants while making scrambled eggs.
Nice. Are those real things, or is that an inside joke for somebody? Leah's wondering if she needs to come across the table.
I'm just pitching the editor. I don't know. It's up to her to decide.
I'm just disappointed I have to follow that.
Well, I'm also disappointed that you think you have to wear pants when you make eggs. You don't.
Evan, so am I. And you're the audience we're trying to reach.
Okay, I got you. Leah Stacey, what's coming up for
you? So hopefully this is not a cop-out. I'm not going to name one thing specifically. What I'm really excited about is the community that we can build with this site. I'm excited to meet more people because while I do know a lot of people who are involved in the industry and in farming closer to downtown because I live here, I am so excited to start widening that circle and hearing more stories and seeing, you know, the fact that we wrote a story about someone and they could send it to their grandma in another state. That is why I do the work I do. And so I'm excited to see what sort of difference we can make by telling stories.
Are you trying to affect change with this website at all, Leah? Is there an editorial direction that is trying to influence change at all in any way?
Well, I think good storytelling always affects change.
But you don't have an ethos that says we want people to do X, Y, and Z, to purchase food in this kind of a fashion, to any specific sort of mission.
I think if we're doing our job well by making people aware and giving them the resources to become even more educated than the information we provide, then I think that change will inevitably happen, whether that's them learning the name of a farmer who's right down the road from their house and maybe joining that CSA next season, or whether they learn about the story of a chef's life and the next time they go to dinner there, you know, that's the conversation they have over the meal that he or she prepared for them. I think, yeah, it's storytelling. We want to hear.
I think that very, very much if there's that outlet, if there is an outlet to tell the backstory that you might decide as a farmer to grow, I don't know, spelt, because at least the world will, there'll be an outlet for the world to know about it. You may be a winemaker is it Nancy at Red Tail Ridge who decides to plant Talladega because there's an audience for it. You might be a chef that decides to take a risk on a menu and do something really cool that maybe, you know, kind of accelerates the Rochester food scene because there's an audience that's going to read about it and that's going to care. And if Boomtown Table can be the channel that people listen to discover those things, then I think we are affecting change.
Carolyn just wants to know, can you ask the panel, should I not be eating at chain restaurants?
That's a loaded question.
First of all, not our job to tell you that. There's a lot of lot of decisions that would go into that. There's nothing in, first of all, whatever, Chipotle is a chain restaurant, Five Guys is a chain restaurant. There's a lot of ways to define that. If you ask that question, I would guess that your conscience might be one to see that, well, maybe that doesn't benefit the local economy, and some chain restaurants are not going to have food sources that are going to be, you know, have respect for, you know, good growing practices or sustainability. So then if you can detect that, I would say, yeah, maybe choose to eat somewhere local. But we're not here to tell you just where to eat. But
Carolyn, I'm going to ask Chuck in a different way then. When's the last time you ate at a chain restaurant?
It's not embarrassingly long ago. I think, yeah, actually I ate Chipotle a couple of weeks ago. But when I take my kids out to eat, I try to go to a local restaurant, of whether I know the person or not, because I think that's important. I think it's very important for the economy.
Okay. Leah?
Can I add one thing?
Sure.
So when you were asking us if we had a certain goal, I think one of our biggest goals, and maybe this is not affecting change in the way that you were originally thinking, but to put Rochester on the map for these things, because I think that storytelling is a way to draw in an audience. And it's that whole, again, that New York thing. I'm from New York. Oh, New York City, that's great. They have so many great things there. No, I'm from Rochester.
And we're 5 hours from New York, right?
And we have other food beside the garbage plate. Yeah. I just want to make that very clear.
Oh boy, this is sensitive.
Well, or that we're at the mouth of the Finger Lakes region.
Yes.
We are enjoying the bounty of these amazing farms that really, quite frankly, is like the hot thing in New York right now. It's actually hilarious. You pick up these menus and it's whether it's cider or beer or grains, it's all pays homage to New York State agriculture. But hey, guess what? We do it here too. You know, my partner, the chef that I co-own my restaurants with, like literally drives to the Finger Lakes every Tuesday with a pickup truck to pick up produce. Like, we know how to do this, because, and let's crow about it a little bit. It's kind of cool.
Is there anybody on this table right now who thinks the garbage plate has been a detriment to Rochester's food reputation?
I've lived here for 16 years and have had one, but not out of some elitas. I just don't understand. Why would you celebrate that? It's like all the condiments. It's cool, I guess, but it's all the condiments of, it's not food. It's not culinary achievement. Sorry, it's not. There comes, but it's not. Like, I don't know.
You'd like us to be known for something else.
I think we deserve. I think there's enough people working hard that we deserve to be known for something else. I don't think any. I'm sure, you know, New York defining it by bagels and pizza is kind of a disservice also. So, but I would love to see the region defined by quality agriculture, you know, enthusiastic talent. That would be kind of cool.
And high quality food writing.
Yes,
well, exactly.
That covers all of this. See, we ended on a somewhat controversial note. Now you've got some people with pitchforks coming at you. Yeah. But you know where to find Chuck. He's at boomtowntable.com. Honestly, if you want to sign up for boomtowntable.com again, Leah, they could do that right there on the website.
Yep. Scroll all the way down to the bottom.
And there's no cost to do that right now. There's not a paywall, etc. It's an online magazine. It is up now. It is just launched. And it's been fun to talk about these issues, and I suspect we're going to be mining the talents of Boomtown Table going forward, because there are so many different food and ag issues related to this. Not the least of which, Chuck Sarankowski, is whether tipping is going to be going away entirely based on what I've seen in New York City. One word, is tipping going to be going away in high-end restaurants?
Not soon.
Okay. Chuck, Eric, Leah, talk to you all soon. Thank you. Thanks for listening today. Val, the engineer, Megan Mack, producer of Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Talk to you tomorrow.